This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network. And I remember playing a pre-season friendly there and just seeing a couple just chilling, having a glass of wine, watching the match. I was like, it's a good day out.
It's very difficult to wake up in the morning and do your hill runs when you're wearing silk pyjamas.
My silk ones were chafing today, actually.
There's no reason you as an individual can't go out and just hire the O2.
I'd dress up as Rod Stewart and go straight on there.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of That Peter Crouch Podcast. Now, this is a special episode because it's brought to you in partnership with Acast and DAZN, the global sports broadcaster and the only place to watch Anthony Joshua.
Yeah.
And our guest is Eddie Hearn. How are you, mate?
Well, I'm very well. I've always heard about the huge success of this podcast, was expecting some lavish studio, was expecting Crouchy to have his own green room with like white sofas and like special flavoured M&Ms or coloured M&Ms. And we're here in some pub in Houston having a Guinness.
So it's how it is, Eddie.
I like that you keep it real.
Yeah, you know. Some people think it's,
roots,
but they think it's a set, don't they? And then they come in here and the other pub that we sometimes do this in is right next to the toilets and they smell the shit next door. And they see the little flies buzzing around and then it hits home.
That's the only issue, really, because the flies like the light. So from when we're next to the toilet, the flies getting near the light and it's not great for broadcasting.
Yeah,
but we like it.
Welcome along, yes. And we want to talk about Anthony Joshua. We want to talk about the fight. We want to talk to you about so many things. We've had you on the podcast before. I don't know if you remember this, Crouchy, because during lockdown, we got a few guests on and it was over Zoom. But every one of those Zooms... we were battered, weren't we? And I mean, there's a whole podcast that we've forgotten from that.
There was a couple that we had to call.
I don't even remember being on.
It's very honest.
Yeah, exactly. Must have been unbelievably memorable, to be fair, for both sides.
But hold on, so you've come straight from TalkSport, right? And obviously Simon Jordan. How was that?
Yeah, it was like this whole Conor Benn fallout, which was, I think, nearly 6 months ago now. Like, he slated me when it all unfolded. And I just refused, it was like he felt like I was obligated to go on his show. Mm. And I thought, I'm not going on your show, like giving you a number. I've done interviews with everybody else. But today I went on, we had a very heated debate for about an hour and a half. As I understand it, through Twitter and social media, it was a unanimous Hearn win on points, which he won't like reading. But he's very good. I'm a good talker, but he really had me on my toes, to be fair.
But he does his research. Yeah, it's obvious he does his research.
Yeah, he's bright. I said, you're much brighter than me, which he is. I said, but you don't know anywhere near about as much about boxing. So you have to acknowledge what I say. But we had some back and forth. And I took it a bit personal because he called me a coward when it all unfolded. For me, that's not a word I like to hear. And he was sort of saying, I was saying you're a coward because you didn't face the media. I said, well, I did, but you still call me a coward. And at the time, I wanted to chin him. I said to him, let's just have a fight for charity. And he went, we're not 12. I said, well, yeah, but let's just still have a fight. Because he may be, there's very few people that I could confirm a win over in boxing. Mm. And he might be one of them. I'm not saying it's a shoo-in, but I did want to chin him. So it took me 6 months to calm down. And we had a good debate, actually. Yeah, he's very bright.
But I think you're a very quick guy, right? But do you have the same situation as I have a lot of the time where I get into an argument with someone and then I always think, shit, I wish I'd said that at the time.
Yeah, there's loads of one-liners that you could have used in certain situations. But I speak from the hip and the heart in all these stuff. So it doesn't mean your opinion's right. But if it's your opinion and you're speaking from your heart on something, then... doesn't really matter what anyone says. It's the truth that's coming out of your voice. So I don't mind going on these things. Got nothing to hide. He doesn't have to agree with everything I say. We had a few encounters in the past when he was of extreme wealth in Marbella, and I was about 18, sort of just having, we used to go out when we was in Sinatra's. We used to buy one round each.
What's Sinatra's? Have you been there?
Oh, come on.
Yeah, Chris, I'm across
has
it.
Has he been there? He used to play Premier League football, mate. They lived there at the time.
I've been across it. Well, yeah, it's just right on the port there. Yeah. Like, it's where everyone... I mean, how old are you?
43.
I'm 42, right? So we'd have probably crossed paths at some stage. Yeah. It's such an average place, wasn't it?
It was like, you come around the corner of the strip, really, in Port of Banus, and it was right on the corner, and it was just the one. You buy one Sambuca, double vodka Red Bull and a pint of Foster's or whatever it was on the time.
I was doing exactly the same.
But that was your round, yeah? So you had six of them and you were absolutely flying. Like, you know, and there was one, you know, the front strip was the decent stuff. Yeah. And then the strip behind it was the not so decent stuff with Linekers and a Navy bar and other such establishments. Yeah. But great days.
Sinatra's. Yeah, have you ever been there, Dave?
I've never been there. One day I hope so. It's one of my aspirations.
Don't go now. It's pony now.
Is it finished now? I've missed the glory days.
Just moved on. So you talk about you being 18 there, right? What was it like when you were 18? Like, how do you get into... to boxing from that? Obviously, I know your dad, from Orient. Yeah. And
so my dad, from Dagenham, he was actually a chartered accountant, very bright, you know, very numbers driven, started to make some investments on behalf of other people. One of those investments was snooker halls. Mm-hmm. So he started his business underneath the snooker hall in Romford. And one day he got a phone call from upstairs in the snooker hall, said, "Bazza, you got to come upstairs. You wouldn't believe this kid, he's unbelievable." Went up there, 15-year-old kid, ginger hair, 6 foot, whatever he was, from Plumstead, just beating everybody. Mm. My dad quickly took him back downstairs, signed him on a management contract, and they went all around the country just hustling. And it was Steve Davis. No. And it was like White Men Can't Jump, and he beat everybody. Next thing, all the snooker players wanted to sign with my dad, you know, and he sort of fumbled into sports. 5-10 years, he moved into boxing. And his first show was Frank Bruno against Joe Bugner at Tottenham at White Hart Lane. And I was about 8 or 9.
No way.
So from the age of 8, he represented, and I hung around with like nonstop Naz, Bruno, Eubank, Ben, Lennox Lewis, all of them. So that was my life as a kid. So I was at the shows. No one really knew my name. I was just Barry's boy, you know, and I was pretty obnoxious really, because he's like, he used to pick me up from school in a limo. I mean, so cringe now looking at it, you know what I mean? But I was like bowling around, you know, and from there, when I left school, I didn't want to go and work for him straight away because it was just a natural thing to do. So I went, became a sports agent, worked on a PGA Tour, the European Tour, representing golfers around the world. And about 5 or 6 years, came back, and I guess I was destined to carry on what he built within the family business. And the foundations that I learned and loved through boxing being a young kid, it's something I'm very passionate about, the sport. I love the sport. I think it's the greatest sport in the world. And along the ways, you know, we've seen Matchroom, snooker, boxing, darts, of course, which is probably our biggest success. We own the PDC. It's unbelievable. I mean, when you talk about turnaround, when we took over the PDC, the world championship was at the Circus Tavern in Purfleet.
I remember it. I went once.
You couldn't, once you stood in there, once you stayed stagnant in a spot for 20 seconds, you couldn't move because of the chewing gum and what else was on the floor. You know, you couldn't get your feet. And, but the atmosphere was unbelievable. Now, darts globally is unbelievable. I mean, the world championship... on Sky, darts is the number 2 rating sport. It destroys boxing, golf, every single sport. The success of that sport is amazing. And, you know, he's a master of turning sometimes niche sports, but people sports huge. And that's what he's done with darts.
There's so much to unpacking that, isn't there? It feels to me you were always destined to be the Eddie Hearn that we know now because of your father and what he was setting up.
I wanted to achieve something in my own right. But when you've got a successful or a rich dad, it's actually quite difficult to do because you're always compared to them. You get a leg up, right? But you have to play the hand you're dealt in life. But the only way you can be an individual success is to outperform your dad. And at school, at Brentwood, Frank Lampard was in the year above me. And every day after school, Frank Lampard Senior would come to Brentwood. He would take Frank over the fields. I'd see him every night working. Shuttle runs, skill, like everything. And he was a good player at Brentwood. He wasn't like, no one looked at him and said, "You're going to go down as an all-time Premier League great." But he worked his nuts off. And when he went to West Ham, it was like, basically, Harry gave you the deal because your dad's Frank Lampard.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you ever worry about that? Well, the kids, like, it's almost like you have this big success, right?
Mm.
But then they'll have to kind of grow up.
With me, I mean, I moved around a lot. I don't know if the boys... will fear that. If they're going to football, they will. But any other walk of life,
yeah, that's hard. In the same industry, particularly, is hard. Your sons, if they play football, will always, or podcasts. I mean, well, even harder if they had their own podcast, because you were a decent footballer, but you're elite in terms of podcasts.
To be honest, I was a bang average footballer, but I am the pod
great
father.
But it's right, though, isn't it? You know, imagine it's a bit like, I guess, Beckham's boy. Playing football, it's tough. So it's difficult for them to be a success in their own right.
Yeah.
What similarities do you think there is between boxing and football in that sense of you've got a roster of boxers and then you've got a team or a squad of footballers? How similar is it in that sort of respect?
Well, I guess management's always important. I mean, look, my old man had Leighton Orient for 15 years. I mean, it was the most enjoyable time of the family's lives and the most frustrating at the same time. Everything's about management. Everything's about the team of people you got around you. It's like when Leyton Orient got promoted to League One and nearly went into the Championship. I mean, that was back in the days we had Russell Slade and we had Martin Ling. They just gelled together and they played for the manager. When my old man sold the club, this Italian came in, trebled the wage bill, and they got relegated twice. You know, so, and that's the same with a fighter, really. It's about just being around the right team of people, being guided in the right way. Boxing's a cutthroat business. Horrible, brutal. And you've got to be a certain individual to go in there and have the mindset to go and have a fight with someone. And you've got to be a horrible, hard fucker.
So I had a little look at the numbers. Terms of
loves numbers, this kid. Absolutely
adores just having a gimmick
before. We're having a look at the, you know, your squad, your first team, your squad. And the win rate's around 94%.
That's good, isn't it?
So if we compare that to managers in the Premier League, the best is Pep Guardiola, 74% win rate. So you're blowing them out.
So what you're saying,
water.
I'm on another level.
Guardiola out of the water.
So what is it in terms of the talent? Is it in terms of how you manage these boxers to make them grow?
Well, just giving them easy fights, really.
What makes you better than Pep Guardiola?
Yeah, well, you know, it's a number of things, really. I mean, I guess I'm the Pep Guardiola of boxing, really, but better. I think the success in the business of boxing is about guiding the fighters in the right way, but it's about your broadcast partner. It's about the profile. You know, I made a decision many years ago. People feel like it was fueled by ego, but it was a little bit, but it was more about actually a strategy of building my profile. I looked at Dana White, right? And even beyond before that, Vince McMahon, right? In the WWE. And every sport, like every combat sport, has the guy who kind of not dictates the sport, but you know, he's the face of the sport in terms of the events and the shows. And we wanted to build my profile in a similar way as that. So you don't always have to rely on the talent.
So you were doing that on purpose.
Yeah, not just like because I like doing podcasts and stuff like that. Like,
no, but I mean like was it even to the point of when a boxing match finishes, you always had such, and you do have such a great knack of being able to get onto camera, you know, always purposefully done, would you say?
Yeah. It's the one thing that I can do better than anybody. But I can really talk and I can really sell. Sales is all about a transfer of emotion. It's so easy when you're a good salesman. So that's when you get onto people like AJ. That's why that relationship has mixed and gelled so well, because you've got like the perfect product.
But you're selling that's sometimes about your role in this world that I find fascinating, in that you're there, like even now, it's the AJ fight and there's lots to talk about with AJ, obviously, but we're talking to you and you're out front talking about that fight whilst he's in a training camp. I assume he's training right now before he comes on this podcast. Do you sometimes get backlash from boxers, AJ, for the things that you say in trying to big them
mainly
up?
Mainly AJ.
Selling the photocopiers.
Normally only AJ.
But in football that happens. You know, like I remember, for instance, you know, I'm not comparing you to Pogba's agent, but you know, like with Pogba, his agent would say something.
Pep,
you know, and like they're getting a lot of trouble for what they say in regards to their player.
Not everything that I say he will agree with. And there's been times where he's come out and gone, Eddie Hearn said that, I didn't say it. But also, if you don't want to do hours and hours of media, he has to rely on me to speak on his behalf. And there's certain things that I've learned that I will speak on his behalf for, and certain things that I won't speak on his behalf for. But also, I'm quite passionate about things, and especially about him, because he's a friend. He's a great ambassador. Like, he's a role model. He's someone that I know gives time to the next generation. Like, I want my kids to look up. I think he's just such a great guy. And when he gets criticized, I do take it personally. So I come out firing, and he'll probably look at some interviews and go, shut up, Eddie.
What's he pulled you on then? What kind of thing?
I guess a lot of it is around like the Fury stuff and stuff like that, because he's not vocal. So you've got like Tyson Fury comes out during negotiations and goes, right, AJ, you big dosser. You know, you either sign a contract now or you're a shit house. Like that. And AJ's like, fucking whatever. But he won't say anything. And I'm like, no.
You've got to come back and say something.
We've got the contract. We sent it back asking for it. So I come out and then it gets in a mess and he's probably thinking, oh, stop, you know. But just, I want it. I've got his back.
How much of it is like selling it? Do you know what I mean? Like, for instance, now I looked with Jake Paul and people like this coming into the sport, must be so different or difficult for you now. It feels like the more you can sell, it's like that's the way boxing's going to go. I think, rather than how good you are as a fighter.
Hype is everything for the sport. But like, I'm a bit more of a purist. So like the Jake Paul stuff, I mean, I promoted his debut. I also promoted KSI against Logan Paul. Mm. But for me, it was really uncomfortable doing that because I am a purist. Mm. Do you know what I mean? And listen, we made a lot of money and the numbers were huge.
Yeah, well, the numbers
and
are
I
huge.
Acknowledge that there is a market for that, but it's not something I'm passionate about or can really put my heart and soul into. Mm. And I said, I will never do a YouTube fight again. But like all the Misfit stuff and the KSI stuff you're seeing now, it delivers, but it's just not for me.
So is Jake Paul, in your eyes, as a purist?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he is. And I've fallen out with Jake a number of times because I've said publicly, he's very, if you want to call yourself a professional boxer, you have to acknowledge you're average as a professional boxer. There's a lot of average fighters. It's still an achievement to be a professional fighter that's average.
Yeah, but you have obviously got an eye for how talent progresses. So do you see that progressing more than average, or do you just see him being an average boxer?
In terms of how good he is for coming into the sport at 23, 24, I think he's sensational. But as a boxer, he's average. Everyone who works in a sport or is part of a sport knows you don't just pitch up at 23, 24. These players with talent are found from 12, 9, 14, 15. You don't just rock up at 24 and go, I think I'm going to play Premier League football.
You know, Usain Bolt gave it a try, didn't he? Didn't work out great. Yeah. We had Danny Cipriani, believe it or not. He came to Tottenham and started training with us. And not the first team, he was training with reserves. And I said, look, what's he like? He was trying to give it a go.
Really?
Yeah, football, yeah.
Yeah, but as Jake Paul hits, what I'm asking is, do you think he will progress to be against bigger and better people?
No. He lost to Tommy Fury. He's reached his level. He'll never be world class. It's not an insult. It's just it doesn't happen. It's absolutely impossible for anyone who's never boxed before at 23, 24 to just start boxing and become a world class fighter. Impossible. Just like it's completely impossible for some bloke in the pub or whatever who might be, you know, have some physical attributes to go fucking go and play Premier League. Mm. Or any level.
Could any footballers go into it? Who's the best footballer you've seen?
Rooney can fight. Yeah. I've spoke to Wayne. I mean, when Wayne has a drink, he'll message me and he'll start going, I'll fight him. And I get excited, right? Sometimes I'll get a message from Wayne going, make me and so-and-so. Make that fight. And I'm like, has it ever been him? No, never Crouchy. But like, sometimes like I'll look at it in the morning and go, fucking
you fancy
hell,
it?
This is massive. And then I'll message him and go, few glasses of red and he won't reply. And I'll go, damn. He was But Wayne can fight.
Yeah, I mean,
Wayne was an amateur.
He's been doing it all his life.
But again, to a certain level as well. But you know, you see now with the YouTube stuff and the Misfits, and it's extended beyond YouTube. It's anyone with a platform. So, and actually, I do think that although most people are in it to make money, it's a great experience to go and have a training camp and have a fight. I mean, what a buzz. Like Freddie Flintoff done it years ago. Yeah. And I think he, looking back, he thinks that was wild. Yeah. Rio had a go nearly, but didn't quite work out, you know.
I think that the training of it, like I could never have a fight. Like I've never had a fight in my life, but I like the training aspect of it. Yeah, I feel like I'm actually like getting something out of it, you know, physically, but I'm learning something new as well. You know, such as a craft to it, isn't it? Yeah. And I didn't realise quite how much until I started doing it myself.
But we have a lot of footballers who in the break, summer break, when they come back, they go, I'm going to go do a bit of boxing. And we bring them down the boxing gym and they are ruined. I mean, the fitness level of tough. I think the toughest sport physically, you know, in terms of training, the sparring, the sprints, it's a very tough game.
Yeah. Let me just quickly, because we are a football podcast as well. But what was it like for you when your dad owned Orion? Mm. And I want to know like who you support.
So when I was about, I don't know, maybe 13, 14, someone owed my dad some money and he ended up, couldn't pay him. So he gave him 4 gold season tickets, hospitality, whatever it was, at Spurs instead. So my old man went, well, that's the best we're going to do. So yeah, boy, you can go over to Spurs. So I used to go with the fighters over to Spurs. And I probably had 2 or 3 years of going over to Spurs. And then my old man bought Leighton Orient, which was just bizarre, really. As a kid, he supported Leighton Orient. But it's every sort of East Londoner's second team. So you support West Ham or someone else, but you also support Orient. But I would go to every game, home and away. And it was like, it was just a great time. When we got promoted at Oxford, you know, we went on a pitch after. It was like, it meant a lot to us as a family. But it was probably the only thing that would really stress him out and piss him off. Because as a chairman, he was so passionate. He loved the club so much that anytime anyone questioned that, he would want to tear up. Mm. Like, literally, I'd be standing there.
Was it too personal?
My dad always said, look, we're losing £1 million a year as a football club, right? I'm comfortable with that. I'm not happy with it, but that's the level that I'm at. And I'm not spending any more money. But we get into a situation where he would have an AGM, right, with the fans, and they would go, why don't you spend some? He'd go, fuck off, why don't you put some fucking money in? Yeah. I'm losing £1 million a year and not a penny more. This is the wage bill, that's how it is. And when we start getting beat, like, we'd sit up in the director's box and the fans would look up and go, you know, new wanker. And he would go, yeah, fucking come on out. I'm like, oh my bad. Like, and I see him like go old school Dagenham on him, you know, and like, but he was so passionate about the club. And he, I would say some of the best times of his life were there and some of the worst times of his life are there as well. But when he had an opportunity to get out, he sold it to the Italians who stuck a fortune. And he actually genuinely thought, you know what, someone's going to come in now. And I've taken it as far as we could. I think we were 2-0 up against Rotherham in the playoffs of League One to get into the Championship. And it went 2-2 in the death and we lost on penalties. And it was like, that was the moment where it was like one way or the other. If we'd got in the Championship, it would have been an unbelievable achievement. So he sold it to the Italians who spent a fortune and got relegated twice. Now it's got some really good owners. They're well clear in League Two about to get promoted to League One. But it's just, when I think about the teams we used to play and I see them now, it's amazing. Brighton, Hove Albion, Fulham, like every, like 5 or 6 teams in the Premier League that we used to play week in, week out in League Two, you know? And
are you involved with them still?
No. He goes a lot. He goes a lot. He went last weekend. No, I always look out for him, but they're like, Orient, it's very difficult for them. Because like I said, they're everybody's second club, but they're a great community club. Like as a, for families to go down there, it's a nice feeling. Everyone knows each other. Yeah. You know, you're not stuck up there and he's in there and that's the hospitality section. It's just everyone's like, you know, part of it. And for him, it was kind of an investment back into his childhood, I think, owning that club.
Did your dad build those flats behind on the corners?
Yeah. Yeah. So what he did was, I
played there a few times. I was like, this is mad. People like on balconies and stuff, like watching the game. Yeah. A block of flats in the corners.
The mad thing about that is, so he was like, we need to build a new stand, right? And actually 2 new stands. And I ain't paying for it. So what I'm going to do is we'll sell off the corners of the ground to a property company and they can build flats. So he did the property deal, built the new stands. We all bought, me, my sister, my old man and Steve Davis, one flat.
Steve Davis.
Yeah, I know. He's my godfather. So he's like, you know, he gets brought along for all the rides. And
So Steve Davis, your godfather?
Yeah, that's amazing. So those flats, we all bought one flat on the top floor and it was $220,000 for a 2-bedroom flat. Very nice. And my sister sold her the other day for $530,000.
Really?
Right? And I'm like, how did we not just buy the block? So I've still got one up there. And the benefit, of course, is you get to have the balcony that watches the game. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
You get a view of the whole pitch.
Yeah, you get a view
of the game.
They all sit out there, people having barbecues and
it's unbelievable when you play there. Like, I remember playing a pre-season friendly there and just seeing a couple just chilling, having a glass of wine, watching the match. I was like, that's a good day out.
But you know, like when you start going, now I take my kids sometimes over to Spurs now because we've done a couple of boxing events there. The only football I watched from the age of, I don't know, 18, like live, and I don't really watch a lot on TV, was League Two football. And now, even when I go back to Oran, like, then you go over to watch Spurs, like, I went Spurs-Chelsea.
New stadium's unbelievable.
Oh, unbelievable.
I know, obviously, you did AJ there.
Yeah.
What was that like? Because I was due, a lot of my mates went to that one. What was it like as an event in the top of the
best? I think the best stadium we've ever been in terms of tech, hospitality, sight lines, everything. I mean, amazing. I mean, I've been to the NFL games there and stuff like that. You know, because it started off, Wembley was the place to do events. We did Froch Groves there, did AJ Klitschko at Wembley. And then Emirates, when it was built, was the new high-tech stadium.
But was that Wembley just to tick off a kind of box?
It's just Wembley's Wembley, isn't it?
Because it's Wembley.
We did the arena, even when I do a show at Wembley Arena,
I go to the Americans, I go, got to go back to London, got a show at Wembley. Wembley Stadium. what's that?
It's when you see some of your weigh-ins at like Wembley Arena and I'm thinking, oh come on now, it's our big event place, that is. We'll do the stadium one day, correct?
We'll do it one day,
but you know, when putting on an event like that, is it actually easy to book a football stadium?
No, I mean, most clubs will only let you play or stage an event for a limited window in the summer. So when the final game of the season is, they like to dig up their pitch. So you've got like a week or two before they dig up their pitch, and you just got to get in at the right time because it mangles the pitch completely. Like when you do a show, it ruins the turf, ruins it. Like the groundkeeper will come out and they'll get the news that the club's done a deal for a show there, and the groundsman's coming out going, no, like, what's going on? And then when you take everything away, like the flooring in the ring, and the groundsman's just like, no, and they'll dig it up and get it out. But Spurs, head and shoulders above anything.
But you can book any stadium in the world, right?
Any stadium.
Because the events you're putting on. As a like football fan or as a sports fan, that's fucking insane.
But you could maybe do it too. But people say to me sometimes, I think this is the fascinating thing. How much is it to hire the O2, right? So we had a situation recently with a Conor Benn, Chris Eubank fight. When that got cancelled, we were already in. We'd paid our money. Like it was cancelled 3 days before. They're not going to re-rent it. So you've paid your money. There's no refunds, right? So we're like,
I'd dress up as Rod Stewart and go straight on there.
Yeah, that's what we were saying. We were going, should we just have a party?
Maggie May on the top.
But we were so depressed the fight didn't go. We actually didn't. But you would have the right. I mean, there's no reason you as an individual can't go out and just hire the O2.
What about as a podcast that we can be the backup?
You can do that.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how your budget's set up.
He's spent the money, Dave.
Have you seen this? Yeah. We can do where we are today.
You know what I mean? The fight gets cancelled, we go on, we're like the backup act.
Yeah, you could do that, yeah.
Do you not? So just on the money thing as well, I've got two questions. One, why do they call it a purse?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I hear like big lads talking about, you know, the
splitting a purse.
You know what they call it?
It feels like the amount of money involved as well should be at least a wallet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also, you know what they call it in Mexico? The bag.
The bag.
Which is like, I think it's even
but that
better.
Makes more sense.
Yeah, a bag. Yeah.
In Mexico, so you're having to do press conferences in Mexico talking about, you know, securing the bag.
Yeah, basically. But the Mexican, the Mexican's trainer and managers and stuff like that will say to me, what's the bag? How much is the bag? I mean, it's probably because it's quite lively over there. You know what I mean? Yeah, they don't really want to call it a purse you know. But yeah, purse is...
Do you know why it's called a purse?
No, I have no idea.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Yeah. Just boxing terminology. Yeah, not the
bravest, is it? A purse, you know, but...
Yeah. I find that mad. And then also, when you do a fight, right? So let's take Anthony Joshua coming up. So with a fight like that, and you're coming out and you're doing all of this stuff, right? And you're becoming bigger and bigger yourself. The same way the boxers you promote get bigger and bigger and public facing and all that. Do you get a bigger split of the purse now?
No, I have to pay the purse.
You have to pay the purse.
Yeah, that's the problem, yeah. But basically the idea is if I can build the fight, the show will make more money. Got so it. Like as a promoter, as the fighter gets bigger, they will own the financials of the show, right? So when they start out, you will pay the purses or the bag for the fighters. And you have to run the business in the show with the economics that you feel is the right value for that fighter. You take the risk, right? When a fighter becomes so commercially successful, they own the financials. So AJ, Canelo Alvarez, you know, these kind of names. We will work for the fighter and take a percentage, if you like, of the show. But they get to see everything. So they know the ticket sales, the pay-per-view sales, or in this case, no pay-per-view for AJ, which is groundbreaking, subscription numbers, the TV rights, everything. And they own everything. So there can never be any arguments. Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like some fighters will think, how much is that Herm making? Whereas in this format, they own everything.
Right,
so you're really only
sense.
As big as your value, you know?
Yeah. Do you get any decent extras like when it gets down to the negotiation, how personal does it get? As in like, just like the money goes to one side, but I need this thing to show you respect
like,
me.
But when they, what, it's not really me, it's more with the opponent. So like Ben Eubank was a great example, whereas like no one would give an inch. So you're about to make a massive fight where both fighters get a fortune, you make money. And then Eubank goes, well, it's Eubank Ben. It's not Ben Eubank. And I'm like, oh, fucking.
Oh, so there's just slight issues.
So it's like, then you go to Conor Benn and you go, just to let you know, like, it's going to be called Eubank v. Ben. And he goes, fuck off. No way. And I go, oh, mate. And I'm like, guys, look, we just need to be sensible about this. We're all on the verge here of making a massive fight. And Conor Benn goes, all right, we'll call it Eubank v. Ben. And I go, oh, what a touch. He goes, but I'm walking second for the ring walk.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, because if there's a champion, the champion always walks second. But when there's no belt like that, so I'm like, sounds fair enough to me. So we go back to Eubank and go, great news, it's Eubank v. Ben. Goes, okay, good. I said, but Connor's going to walk second. fucking no way. I'm like, guys, I said, give a little, you know. So then it's like, all right. And honestly, it goes down to, all right, well, no, I'll walk second, but he can be announced second in a ring. Or it goes down to like changing rooms. I want first choice of changing rooms in the venue. And half of it is ego and half of it is mind games to say, no, I showed you. Klitschko was really good at that. When he boxed AJ, I remember AJ telling me, they'd do a head-to-head and they'd be looking at each other and Klitschko would go, let's look at the cameras in 1, 2, 3. And AJ would find himself going,
like, and he doesn't move.
No, he moves. Oh, but it's just mind games to let you know who
I'm
the boss
in control.
Is. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, yeah, good. And then he'll finish. You go, well done, AJ. Good, good. No, thank you.
Because you're right in the middle. Yeah, you see this.
But that's the same. So it's like, and then when the fight gets made, they sit down at a press conference and they see the backdrop and it says, Eubank v. Ben. And they might say in a head-to-head, Eubank v. Ben. Enjoy walking first. Do you know what I mean? Or I'm going to give you a shitty changing room.
You know that you've had that conversation.
Yeah, you know
before.
You've been. Yeah, you.
And you're
gave,
just smiling away, going. Oh,
yeah, I know. Yeah.
who's the best you've seen at the like the verbals?
Bellew's good, but he's quite emotional. David Haye was really good. Like David Haye was calculated. Like everything that he did was actually thought about. It wasn't like he didn't act off emotion. He would know what he was going to do in every press conference. Like when we did Bellew against Haye one. Like I'd done the deal with David. Everything was like great. And I sat at the press conference and I was like, here we are today. This is one of the biggest British fights of all time. David Haye, the former unified world heavyweight champion against the cruiserweight world champion, Tony Bellew. It's Liverpool against London, blah, 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 blah. David, how do you feel about this fight? And he went, well, I wondered when you were going to shut up. And I was like, sorry. And he went, I'm sick of it. Apples and pears. It's the Eddie Hearn show. Your ego's out of control. No one wants to listen. Like, went on for about 10 minutes. And I'm like, the fuck?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I was like, you what? I said, I'm giving you a chance. You were skint. I said, I'm getting you right out of a hole here. But it went backwards and forwards. Finished the presser. They had a little scuffle. All over social. Hey, rips Hearn. Oh, that was brilliant. He fucking destroyed him. About time Eddie Hearn got a take. I'm like, anyway, finished. Was going for some lunch. And I looked down at my phone, it's David Haye. He went, how good was that? I was like, sorry? He went, how good was that? I went, what? He went, that was unbelievable. Everyone loved it. Oh, brilliant. Anyway, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. I was like, and then you just realised he was the best. He was a very good promoter, yeah. David Haye. Like, you know, and he played the game.
I suppose as much as it's a lot of the job, isn't it?
Like it is. I like it when a lot of people say to me sometimes, oh, do you tell the fighters what to say or... You know, when there's a argy-bargy and they bring the nuts together, I'll bet Hearn told them to do that. It has to be natural unless you're like David Haye because these fighters, they're not actors. Like you have to understand, we are antagonizing them, really. We are bringing them together to have a fight and we're bringing them face to face when they haven't eaten and they're trying to make weight and they're ready to have a fight in front of the world. It's going to go off every now and again. And these people are not normal people. Like they're tough, tough people. Mm. And when there's confrontation, they will explode.
I mean, you saw that with AJ. And we should talk about this as well, about how you see him at the moment. We're going to be speaking to him in a bit. And that explosion that AJ had at the end of that fight. And obviously you were there. And did you see this crowd?
When he gets the mic and
he grabs the mic, he's saying all this stuff. Can you talk us through just how you were seeing it from where you were and what was going on and what you wanted to do and how it all played out?
Obviously, I knew what he put into the fight. He got beaten in the first fight and it was almost a year actually till the rematch. And like that whole 11 months was just a desperation to win, like trying to put it right. Just so desperate to regain his belts and he put everything into that fight. So when he lost, I got in the ring and he was trying to do his sort of humble but deep down I knew he was just fuming. It was like a frustration of, how did you beat me? Like I couldn't have done any more. And then he got the belts and he threw him out of the ring. That was more because when he had the championship, he would get mandatories put on him. It would stop making the Fury fight and Wilder fight. And he sort of thought, that was almost like a, you know, and then he walked out of the ring.
What were you thinking?
I was thinking,
point?
I don't really like that because you've got to show respect, you know, the foundations of the sport. And that's not really AJ. And as he was walking out, he turned around and he came back in. I'm like, that's a good thing. And then he grabbed the mic. Now, you've got to understand, when you've done 12 rounds right, with Alexander Usyk, and you've been bashed around the head, and you're emotional. You can't really speak with much sense. But he spoke from the hip and from the heart. Some of it was, you know, he wishes he never said, but some of it was just, it was just all from the heart. Mm. Got criticism for that. I think rightfully so. I think he's apologized for that as well. Then when we went to the presser, this is like, you have to understand, you go back to the change room, he sits there for an hour, crying at times, like just devastated in defeat. And you have to go and face the media and answer all the questions. Mm. Again, after a 12-round fight. So he goes to the presser and he starts crying. Like public, I couldn't believe it really, because he's like, he's missed the brave face. Do you know what I mean? And I just felt like all the pressure of all the years of the life that he ended up living. I don't think people understand sometimes. People look at the success of some people like AJ and think, oh, look at him, like great house, made millions, got a nice car. But is it really a great life? I mean, he can't do anything. You know, he can't walk out of his house without either media following him around or fans or whatever. He can't go for a meal, can't go to the park with his mates to play football, can't go for a coffee. Like things that and he's just such a normal individual. And I feel like the stress of being this ambassador for British boxing and carrying the sport on his shoulders, that was like just, it became too much for him. Mm. And I think that moment was like, I just can't take it anymore. Like the pressure, I've tried to do it. And now he's much more, you know, when we did the press conference with Franklin, I was like, what motivates you now? And he's like, money. And I'm like, you'd never have said that. And it's actually not true, but certainly more now he understands his prize fighting. I think he's tired of being that guy.
Like, I've seen footballers in the same way. Like he was built up to be this thing. Like it was like he was superhuman and it was like no one could touch him. He's an untouchable, you know, and he was the poster boy for a sport. People like Michael Owen, you know, at 18 years of age, he's scoring goals in a World Cup. He wins the Ballon d'Or. You know, it's so hard to, you know, to be superhuman. Mm. No one is. So for him now, he's in a situation now where I suppose he's been brought that back down to earth a touch. Where is he now and for this fight?
I think we'll find out April 1st. Like he's taken himself away. So this training camp has been in Dallas with a new trainer. Like one of the problems that he had is obviously he is sort of widely adored. And when he was training up at the EIS, which is the English Institute of Sport, there's pictures of him everywhere. It's where he trained for the Olympics. And it's like scientists and like seven boxing rings. And it's an amazing facility. Mm. But he would literally walk in. And everyone would be like, hey, Jay, oh, you know, and he didn't want that. He wants to be told what to do. He wants to be beasted. Mm. So he's taken himself away to Dallas with a few people only, with a new trainer in Derek James, who just won Trainer of the Year in America. And I've just come back from Dallas where he was living and training. And I couldn't believe the difference of the environment. Like the gym is in a lively place. Let's just
say. You mean this is all going a bit Rocky Balboa?
100%. 100%.
Gone back to the boxing.
Yeah, gone back to
chasing chickens.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Not. I mean, if you look at the promo, it is axing down trees.
Yeah.
It's all of that. I mean, it's a bit more high tech than that, but it is just graft and hard work. And he loves boxing like more than anything. And I don't feel like he's enjoyed the last few years because of the pressures. He doesn't want to be a star. Honestly, he doesn't want, he just wants
to. What does he want then? You're saying the money thing's maybe not the whole truth. Let's not call it a lie. Maybe not the whole truth. And he's at a level and he can't do various things. What is the motivation? What
competition.
Does he want?
Competition, bettering himself and winning. And
he loves the sport. What will be winning?
I mean, winning is to reclaim the world heavyweight title. Winning is to knock Jermaine Franklin out in style and get everyone to go, AJ's back, and to land the Wilder fight or land the Fury fight and win. Mm. That is the greatest comeback story.
Is this a realistic route?
Well, I think he can get the fights. I just want to see him beat Franklin first and then we go from there. But we know because of the size of him, because of the story, because of the draw, he's always capable of landing the Fury fight or the Wilder fight. So it's not like he won't get the opportunity. But you know, I keep saying to him, I said, you lost to Usyk twice. And the last fight was close. I said, you've done really well. He's pound for pound number one in the sport. Like, you know, people go on like AJ is all of a sudden is this spent force. Mm. Jesus, really? Look, in world boxing, it's Usyk, Fury and AJ. And you could throw Wilder in the mix. They're the top end. So you just got to believe in yourself. But it's when the enjoyment goes out of something. That's what I think happened around the Usyk fight. I feel like I don't know whether I'm in love with this anymore. And I think by removing yourself and taking yourself back to really how it used to be, like in his gym in Dallas, you fall in love with the sport again. But the most amazing thing about boxing, and I say this about Canelo Alvarez all the time, these guys have come from nothing, right? When you achieve everything you could ever dreamed of and make a fortune, boxing is one of those sports where if you don't have the passion and desire and love for it, you just can't do it. Marvin Hagler used to say, it's very difficult to wake up in the morning and do your hill runs when you're wearing silk pajamas. That is one of the greatest lines in boxing. Quote, right?
Yeah. Can you relate to that?
My silk ones were chafing today.
But you know, you've got to do those runs. You've got to go and do 12, 15 rounds of sparring with other heavyweights smashing you around the head.
No, it's ridiculous.
You know, you've made all this money. You're a two-time world heavyweight champion. Mm. Why? Because I love the sport. I love winning. I'm a competitor. Canelo Alvarez got more money than God, right? He's out there training three times a day.
But is there not a time to get out as well?
Yeah, like, when you've deteriorated and when you don't enjoy it anymore.
Yeah.
So like if you go, listen, if AJ went and lost to Jermaine Franklin and said to himself, I don't love it anymore. Time to go. If you stay in this sport for too long, it's dangerous.
Dangerous.
That's when you get hurt. Actually,
is that what puts pressure on this fight?
Yeah, because if you lose, like the perception is, oh, he should steamroll Franklin. I'll tell you what, Jermaine Franklin just fought Dillian White, could have gone either way. AJ's coming off two defeats. You know, we're talking about the emotional side of what happened after the fight. Mm. Who knows how he's going to come back? Mm. I hope and I believe he's going to come back and make a statement, but I'm probably more nervous about this fight than I've been for the Klitschko fight because back then, he was just a young, fearless kid that didn't know anything. He was just going, he was destroy. Go in. Now, the problem is once you become better educated about the sport, you also realize that you've got to be smart in there. Now, he used to go in and just come forward. And I think probably after the Klitschko fight, thought to himself, if I fight like that, I might not have a very long career. So I need to get better. I need to improve my defense. But you've got to still be fearless. And if you're not fearless as a fighter, then it's not a good spot. But he is. And once he lets his hands go, as I said to him in Dallas, you do realize that when you let your punches go, you put the fear of Christ into everyone. You got to believe that. And you got to fight like that.
Well, I don't know if you'd have crossed this, Ed, but our podcast tune is Chumbawamba. And if you could mention that to AJ,
maybe
if you could come out to that one.
Street cred would go well out the window. I mean, we had Stormzy walk him out once. I think Chumbawamba, I don't know, they still even around.
It's a great song.
Yeah, it's a great song. Yeah. And Back Stronger. So that applies to AJ in this instance. We'll be chatting to him later.
First AJ fight under DAZN as well. That's very exciting.
Yeah, big moment for them. I mean, obviously, we made the move away from Sky. Just under 2 years ago, and now they've acquired a number of the biggest names in sport, Canelo Alvarez, particularly in the US, and now Anthony Joshua. So, you know, we believe that streaming is the future of broadcast. Obviously, you can watch the fight via DAZN on your handset, on your laptop, on your smart TV, but also now via Sky on channel 429, which was, you know, I don't feel like that's the future for DAZN, but there's still an element of the audience that likes to sit there and just press 429 and I'll watch it that way. And a lot of Sky subscribers that have watched AJ's whole career. So now they can watch it still on the Sky platform and via the app as well. So a big moment for DAZN and we look forward to a great show on April the 1st.
Any ideas why I've decided to spell it like that?
It's very interesting. And I still get people going, oh, I watched the fight last night on DAZN. You know, or on DAZN. You know, and actually,
I've heard a few people say like weird ways to that. Yeah. Like DAZN.
Yeah, I know. That was a lot of the marketing campaign when they launched. You know, it was like, how do you say it? DAZN. No, DAZN. And also for Anthony Joshua that has spent his whole life on pay-per-view, remarkably, this fight, part of your subscription on DAZN. So one of the few times I've been popular, actually, because normally it's like, Earn's making us pay pay-per-view as well for Joshua. Not this time on DAZN.
Yes, huge thanks to DAZN for making this happen. Huge thanks to Eddie for coming on. We look forward to the fight.
Fingers crossed.
Right, we're joined by our very special guest here, Mr. Anthony Joshua. How are you, mate?
All good. All good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm good. We had Eddie Hearn on earlier. He was telling us how much he loves you, actually.
I love him too. He's a good guy. But honestly, that guy is phenomenal work rate. And that's the type of promoter you need, honestly. He does his job. tenfold.
Yeah. Do you find it strange that you send this guy out, right, on your behalf, and he appears on all these things, but he's like the king of memes as well? So you must wake up some days and see things he said and be like, why the fuck have you said that?
Yeah, pretty much, basically. But when you've got a camera in your face 50 times a day, you're going to say certain things, and you're going to probably... It's hard not to talk about whatever people ask you. It's kind of rude to avoid questions. He's just doing his job. And you guys and people that are putting cameras in his face are doing him a favor by putting his business out there. It's great marketing for him. Even though he's a face, it's like this bottle here. It's just got me talking half the time. This bottle here is a standalone product. Eddie's his product, isn't he? And he has to talk about what he does every minute of every day. And I think he does an amazing job. He don't stop.
Yeah, he does, to be fair. So he said you were training in Dallas for this one. Is that right? And he said it was a bit gritty, kind of like old school boxing gym you're at.
It's what boxing's always been. Yeah. I don't know any different, to be fair. Mm. Like when I'm in London, I'm based at my amateur gym in Barnet. Before that, I was up in Sheffield in the Olympic gym. And they're all the same. Boxing gyms are all the same. So I don't know. People, I think there's this perception that I'll probably train in a different type of environment, which is more high-end equipment. But no, it's pretty much similar to what I'm used to be fair.
Yeah, that's similar, to be fair, to our podcast where we record. People think we've got a nice studio now. It does well. You know, at the moment, I'm back home, but we're usually recording in a pub, which is, it's not the nicest pub.
But it does the job, right?
It's home. It's where we are. It's what we're used to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So why Dallas? Let me ask, why Dallas?
All right, so I come into boxing, then 3 years later, I was like, well, a year and a half later, I was representing the country at the Europeans, 2 years later at the Worlds, 3 years later at the Olympics. Then I turned pro within 3 years of starting amateur boxing. 3 years later, I was world champion. And basically, like, the rise has been quick. So I've never really been, like, on a learning trajectory. I've always been, like, preparing for a competition or preparing for a fight. So I've just always kind of, in the back of my mind, been on a quest to improve. Even though I could have just stuck doing what I'm doing and just fighting the way I fight, I've always been on a quest to try and improve my boxing skills and our research and whatnot. So what I'm trying to say is that from Finchley Boxing Club in Barnet, where I started, that quest to learn and improve has taken me to Dallas. And that's just my stop-off ground at the minute.
We've got a catchphrase on this podcast. It's back stronger. And Crouchy, do you want to quickly explain where that came from?
Do you know what it was? It was for me, it was like the footballers who blag it a little bit. You know, the social media kind of like players, footballers who are like, you know, it's like getting it out there and be like, oh, we played terrible today. The generic kind of like, we'll be back stronger next week. You know, that kind of thing. It became a bit of a tagline, like a bit of a joke.
It's become a bit of a tagline, but it has become a thing with this podcast.
Yeah.
Is there a feeling or a slight feeling of that with this fight that's coming up, Anthony?
Not really. Like, I'm just at a place where I just do whatever I can do and just do my best. Like, what more can I do? What more can I really do? Back stronger, back weaker, whatever. I just do my best. I'm back. That's the main thing. He's back. And we'll figure out where that is on April 1st. Yeah. And you know what it is? You only, what do they call it? Disintegrate when you give up.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm just going to keep on plugging away. As I said, I think I've got talent. I'm definitely someone that works hard. I put in the work. It comes with a lot of pressure, but I'll always do my best. I'll always do my best, 100%. And that's it. That's all I can do. Whether it's back stronger or you guys can use that motto. But for me, all I know is I'm back April 1st.
Good to hear.
What's happening with this fight, Andy? Where are we with this fight? Like,
do you know, look, all right, where are we? So I've had 12 back-to-back world title fights. Like back to back. So that's like not only the fights, it's the training camps, 12 back to back world title training camps. It's hard work. This is my first non-title fight in 8 years. but I still take it serious. But it's just like, I'm with a new coach. I'm learning, not learning. I already know half of the things, but I'm just adapting and just pushing on. And just going to give him my best against this next opponent. He probably looks at it like a lot of these guys want to make a name. Like, so that's where he's going to come game. He wants to stomp his authority in the heavyweight division. I don't underestimate him at all. I think that's silly. He's talented. He's awkward. I know people that have like worked with him before, so I know about him. And he's one that you shouldn't underestimate at the end of the day. You underestimate someone, anyone can pop out of nowhere and beat you. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, just going to take him serious.
Okay, well, listen, you know, we wish you well. I just want to ask you a couple of questions on football. Are you a Watford fan?
No.
Oh, Anthony, I like Watford, though. You break my heart, you know, as a Watford boy.
I read them. That's where I'm from, but I don't really. What it is, I never followed football.
Don't tell me that.
I swear to you. Listen, I'll be honest with you. If I kept my head down and I didn't get in trouble, I reckon I could have been Prem.
Really? That's a big shout.
Yeah. Honestly, like, I used to bang in about 40 goals a season for Garson.
No way.
I'm telling you. Anthony, it's funny because Peter says the same about boxing.
Do you know what? My reach is spectacular. I just jab people's noses. I'll be honest with you, I've never been a fighter. It's just not been my thing.
If you was, you would have definitely made it to the top.
Nah, I don't know about that. Not with these linguine arms. Andy, listen, I know you're busy, mate, and I know you're preparing for your fight. So you're back in London now, you're at the O2. Yeah. How's it going to feel back at the O2?
Good. It's going to be, I've been thinking about it, but I'm not going to look too forward to it because it's like, it's here today and gone tomorrow. Do you know what I mean? Honestly, it's crazy how it works. You build yourself up for it and be like, yeah, and just get lost in a moment and it's done. You're back at your hotel. So I'm just going to embrace it, but I've got a job to do. That's the, do you know what I mean? That's what I'm focused on.
You got the walk-on sorted as well. Are you ready with that?
There's a few bangers that have come on a playlist in the gym that I thought, oh, that one. They messaged me saying they want to get someone to do a live performance. The problem is with live performances is that I feel like you're not focused.
Yeah.
You're focused on like who's going to ring walk you. So I just told them, speak to my manager and let him sort it out. But there's a few good artists out there that I would like to reach out to. Well, they would like to reach out to, but I'm here nor there. I've got to focus, get the job done.
Actually, it sounds like it's not Chumbawamba or Vanessa Carlton.
Let me ask you a question. Do you ever remember a ring walk song?
Mate, the ring walk says, Stormzy. For me, I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah. Stormzy
was the one. Prince Nazeem was up there for me. I always remember the Hot Stepper. Remember that one?
The Hot Stepper.
I thought that was massive when he come out on the carpet. That for me was pretty epic. But you've had some good ones yourself.
Yeah. They have been fun. They've been, well, that defeats what I was trying to say, actually. So yeah.
No, like, listen. I know you're taking it serious, but the ring walk's important. We all know it is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's very important.
Anthony, best of luck, mate. We'll be back in your
course. Lads, man. Appreciate your time. Huge thanks to The Zone for making this episode happen. We've all enjoyed speaking to Eddie Hearn there and the crossover between football and boxing. Heard from AJ as well, and good luck to him with his up-and-coming fight. Return to the ring, only on The Zone. This episode is brought to you by aloadofpricks.net. We are the experts in selling houses. Chris couldn't sell his house. What did you do, Chris?
I couldn't sell my house for love nor money, Crouchy. 3 different offers I had, all at the last minute, fell through. I turned around to my wife and said, what can we do to sell this house? Every estate agent is failing us. Then I told her, let's go to aloadofpricks.net.
But Chris, what did a load of pricks do for you?
They were brilliant, Crouchy. They sold my house right away. The sign had barely gone up when a well-dressed gentleman came along and offered me twice the asking price.
Chris, would you use a load of pricks again?
I'd use them every time, Crouchy.
Go to aloadofpricks.net. They will sell your house like no other. Load of pricks, load of pricks.net.